Hi, everybody. It's Jim Bakiai. The podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. Well, Katie tells me that my friends at Audible still haven't flipped the switch. So before that mad rush of all of you are dying to buy the book, just let it be pent up demand. And the first 10,000 people will get a personal phone call from me as well, having downloaded the book. You'll need to send me an example of that you did download the book. But anyways, no, seriously. And I'm on the cusp of working with this one wonderful woman, Amelia, who is helping me with my TED Talk pitch, which I got to tell you, I'm really excited to do. You know, lately I've been getting such incredibly positive reinforcement from those of you that are listening, people that I'm coaching. I'll sort of tell you a funny sort of sideline story. I was, as all of you know, I'm down in Florida, and I was out to play golf the other day. I think it might have been Saturday. This gentleman came over to me. He's probably in his 80s. And he said, "Jim, can I have a word with you?" Well, normally at clubs, when someone comes over and says, "Jim, can I have a word with you?" It's usually like I've done something wrong. And instead of sending me a letter or something like that, that's been the story of my life. He said, "I read your book." I looked at him and I was like, "You read my book?" And he goes, "Yeah, True Fit." He said, "The pro gave me the book." And I said, "And how did that end up happening?" And I coach the pro and a lot of the people that work in the professional shop and stuff like that. I've done it for years. I love them. And they had asked, he had asked him and a couple of people on the golf committee had asked him about why the pro ran the place the way he did, which was somewhat unconventional to the way they've seen other clubs run. And he told them that I had been coaching him, I'd worked with him and helped change his views positively and change views, and that it runs much more efficiently. And he's far more aware of the kind of people he needs to surround himself with, filling the skill gaps that he needs and getting people to do the things they're really good at. Shockers. And everybody seems to be much happier. So anyways, I said, "Well, that's great, Steve." I said, I'm really, thank you. You know, I mean, you may be my first 80-year-old that has ever read the book. And he said, just a couple of things. And I said, "Okay, you could tell this is a real passion for you." And then the second thing is, I wish I'd read it 50 years ago, which, you know, probably right up there with that woman saying to me, "I'll be a better role model for my daughter." That's pretty high praise for me. And for those of you that know me, you know, this is not a financial business. I mean, not that I don't mind selling books or anything else, but this is really a mission to help people, you know, help themselves and be themselves and be comfortable with that. It kind of caught me off guard, to tell you the truth. And, you know, sometimes I forget, but it actually sort of made me step back and reflect. I started to reflect more and more on a bunch of the people that I coach and everything else. And at the core of it all, I seem to be doing the same thing over and over again. It's a bit like Groundhog Day, you know, when Phil goes, "Okay, a little breath of the bear, you know, here comes Bob and Mary." And I've developed this pattern where I can feel where the people are resisting. And it's like I get them to the top of the hill and then they come back down the hill. And I get them to the top of the hill, but there's nothing in front of them to stop them except for themselves. And I'm not saying I don't understand, but courage, just courage when there is no downside, right? The courage is to find out that there is no downside. At least you're going to know. So I work with a lot of different people, and this one person I'd worked with had agonized for weeks over something between her and her boss. And I said to him, "Well, you just got to go and talk to him." "Oh, no, I don't know if I can do that. You know, I mean, you know, I don't want to say to them that, you know, this or that." And I said, "No, no. My view is respectful engagement is the key. 90% of the issues are what the delivery is. If the delivery starts with, 'You're wrong, you did this, blah, 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 blah,' everything tunes in. But if you're genuine in your delivery, as in, 'This is how I feel,' people understand, not everybody agrees, but your feelings can't be denied. the thing about our feelings is we truly want to figure out, did I feel the right thing or did I miss something and it made me feel a certain way? So you should want to have that clarification. You should want to clarify that so that now I know I'm going left or I'm going right, as opposed to sitting here going, oh God, I'm confused. Anyways, she had her first meeting with her boss, and I think it was confusing, and there was sort of some emoting out of that meeting. It was less sort of clear, but he was aware enough to recognize there was a problem. And so he set something up very quickly afterwards, and she and I worked on this, and she did the presentation. I didn't do any of the work, and it was out of the park. It was out of the park. It was fantastic. So I had, just by coincidence, had an opportunity to engage with him later in the week after the sort of meeting. And unsolicited by me, he brought up the fact that she had taken this presentation, knocked it out of the park. He didn't realize the things that were going on. It was incredibly informative, and there was a call to action, and he's already on it. And in fact, he's used it as a learning moment for him, in that he's encouraging more of his management team to speak up. Because at the end of the day, when we don't speak up, we're not just doing a disservice to ourselves. We're doing a disservice to the people that we work for as well, because we're withholding information that may be of value to them in helping them make their decisions. Now, listen, I'm not, you know, Pollyanna, and don't think that there's not always a risk that the person you're working for might say, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, or something like that. But if that's the case, then you should really be peeling back and asking yourself, do you want to be in that type of environment, right? And I know I've talked about this before, but I wanted to go over it again today because I think it's really, really important. And I think it's really important that people focus on it and people think about, there's a difference between being forward and bold and being rude. They're not necessarily one and the same. I think people think that if I'm forward and I'm bold, then people are going to take that as rude, or they're going to take that as boastful, or they're going to take that. But if your approach is one in which is informative, it's educative, it's, I don't even know if educative is a word, but anyways, I just used it. If it's not, I'm using it anyways. But it can be helpful. And it's helpful for you establishing a different relationship with the person you work for. And you're going to find out very quickly whether they want your ideas. And God help you if they do. And you say to yourself, oh my God, I've been holding these things back all the time and they actually want them. Like, what a fool we feel like, right? Or I've been holding them back, and I've been right to hold them back because they don't want them. Well, if they don't want them, then the next piece of learning is, do I really want to be working for that person? But every one of these steps is, it's kind of like, you know, whether it's those Mario games or, you know, there's a little treasure at the end, you know, you unlock the box and, you know, hey, Mario, or whatever it is, you know, you get this little treasure, right? And so there are always those little treasures. You know, I've become a bit, not cynical, but I, in some cases, when people are really resisting the upward climb at that beginning, they're just squeamish, and I've sort of like, okay, it's day 4, conversation 6, we're right where they should be. And the majority of people are on track, because I get the fact that it's really hard. I get the fact that it goes against the grain of everything you've learned in your entire life. I get the fact that we're all afraid of being embarrassed. But I say to people, how can you look stupid or be embarrassed if it's about you? Don't you look more stupid and feel more embarrassed when you're pretending to be somebody else? You're the same person, whether someone picks you to marry you or doesn't pick you to marry you. You're the same person. You're the same person if you get the job or you don't get the job. The job doesn't define, the picking doesn't define you. You define yourself. When you stop looking for that reinforcement for others to define you, it's an incredibly freeing process. It's the same way as when you test the pot, if it's hot or it's not, right? Is it hot water? Is it not hot water? You don't stick your whole arm in the pot and find out that it is. You dip a little finger in, right? So why is this any different? Why should this be any different for any of us? It shouldn't be. I appreciate because I saw it in Katie's face when I first started working with her, and I see it in everybody's face. I could see the fear in people's faces. I could see them going, yeah, wouldn't that be nice? But, you know, but then the flip is, once they climb that hill and they get to the other side, the strength they feel and the confidence they feel and the happiness on their face, there's no stopping them. Katie, you're a perfect example. You know, Katie has built this wonderful business for herself. She gets to choose her clients. She gets to work with people she likes working with. She gets to listen to podcasts that she enjoys listening to. Yet if we were to go back to the beginning, this is the same Katie that was inside then, but this is a Katie who actually likes Katie and believes in Katie and doesn't give a shit what anybody else thinks. If someone says, no, I don't want to use her, she's like, okay, I'll find somebody who does, right? And this mission of mine is constantly pushing, and I'm going to get more aggressive in it because every day I see the success, I see the joy, I see how it transforms people's lives. Not me giving them the courage. They have the courage. It's there. They need to believe it. You know, this transformation, you can just see it in people. And really the best part is, even when it's working well for them, they still have that little kid amazement. And when they say to me, like I did it and it worked. And I go, yeah, no, I know it works. And it worked the last three times. I know, but it's still working. And I'm just like, yeah, it's still working because you're still doing it. And I'm actually being even bolder. And I'm like, yeah. And it's working even more. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And even though it's working, they're still in that utter state of amazement. And it's really, I mean, unbelievably personally rewarding for me. And I even said to my wife, I said, you know, I said, I never understood where this journey was going to take me, but taking me down a road of helping people with their own happiness and transforming their lives and their insecurities and all of those things has to be a good thing to do. And it has to benefit people even more than just their jobs. It probably benefits them in their personal lives, in their marriages, you know, with their kids and everything else. And now I sound like, you know, I'm sort of crazy, but the reality is every day and every week and every month, I have more people that go through this journey with me. And every day and every month, even I have to learn to push even harder. Even I don't know the full extent of the power of this. That's why I'm doing the TED. That's why I want to do the masterclass. That's why I want to do another book. That's why I'd like to do public speaking. Not because my ego needs it, but because even I, who delivered the message, have no idea what the limitations of this are. So I know this kind of sounds redundant to last week, but it's really, really important for me that people keep pushing on this, right? Drive through a barrier of fear. Continue to keep that log of instincts, right? And when you say it and when you think it, verbalize it. You know, so someone says to me, well, you know, how would I say that to them? And I say, well, just say it to me. And then they'll tell me, they'll say, well, you know, this isn't working. The reason this isn't working, da, 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 da. I said exactly like that. This obsession with outguessing what people are going to think or what people are going to do. And I can't do that because possibly this, possibly that, maybe this, or I don't know, could take it this way. Whoa. Why don't we just find out how they're going to take it? Let's just tell them. And 90% of the time, in my experience, they take it the right way if you do it respectfully. And people actually thank you, right? What is that expression? The truth will set you free. And, you know, transparency and honesty, you know, are the hallmark of great relationships, whether they're personal or whether they're professional. And that the reason all relationships fail is because we are afraid to have that transparency. We're afraid to be ourselves. We're afraid to be rejected. What could I have done differently? Nothing. You were you, and you just doesn't work. This obsession with this second guessing has to stop. I want you to get rid of it out of your lives. I want you to move forward, keep moving forward. And I'm going to be on this over and over because I think for people to really grab this at the beginning of the year will be really, really important to them. So the second thing I want to talk about is just because we're all at home doesn't mean that all of you that I used to have phone conversations with, I now need to have Zoom conversations with. There is this, for some reason now, everybody thinks that we have to Zoom everything. I got to get out of my house coat in the mornings. And I say to people like, well, didn't we always used to talk on the phone? And they said, yeah. And I said, didn't that work pretty well before? And they go, yeah. And I said, so why do we need to Zoom now? Like, I'm tired of looking at your place. You're tired of looking at my place. But it's all of a sudden like the phone's not good enough anymore. And the reality is, as I said to someone the other day, even when we were at the office, most of the calls we made were on the phone. Meetings were different. But if I was calling you one-on-one, I phoned you. I didn't FaceTime you. I didn't walk down to your office. And so it's funny how these little side things occur. You know, I mean, my calendar is filled. And in the morning when I have my calls in the morning, oh, God, I got to get dressed. I got to get out of the house coat. I should probably shave. And then the other thing that I find is people get offended if they have a Zoom call booked for you and you use the call feature and not the Zoom feature, right? And then they go, well, I thought we were going to Zoom. And I was like, why? That's what I do now. I Zoom. And I'm like, why? I know you. I've known you for 20 years. I don't need to see you. We can have the conversation on the phone. So if you don't need to see the people all the time, cut them a break and don't have the Zoom call. Someone said to me, well, you know, I just feel better if I can look at the person. I said, but did you feel that way before? And they said, no, because I never looked at them on the call. And I said, well, then if people don't want to Zoom, don't take it personally. So that's my podcast for today. I'm hoping my audiobook will be out. Katie, what was it? The first 20,000 people get a call from me, I think it was. But everyone, have a great week. Be you. The world will adjust and turn up the dial on your boldness and trust your instincts.